Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into a really fascinating book, Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein.
Yeah, this one really made waves, and it's still incredibly relevant. Maybe more than ever.
Totally, because it tackles this fundamental thing about us, right? How we often, well, sabotage ourselves.
Exactly. We want to save money. We want to eat healthier. But then, you know, life happens. We get stuck or tempted or just confused by all the options.
Right. And the book doesn't just point fingers. It offers a way forward.
Mm-hmm. It proposes this pragmatic approach to designing systems, designing choices that help us make better decisions without forcing our hand.
So that's our mission for this deep dive.
Yeah.
Unpacking what they call libertarian paternalism. Sounds a bit odd, I know.
A definite head scratcher at first glance.
But it's about how these small, subtle changes in our environment, the choice architecture, can gently, well, nudge us towards better outcomes.
Critically, without taking away our freedom to choose something else if we really want to. It's not about mandates. It's about smarter design.
It recognizes we're not robots. We're not these hyper-rational econs that old economic models assumed.
Right. We're humans, as they put it. Flawed, biased, sometimes impulsive, but capable of making good choices if the path is made a little clearer, a little easier.
So who are the thinkers behind this influential idea? Let's talk about the authors. First up, Richard Thaler.
Ah, yes, Nobel Prize winner. He's really one of the godfathers of behavioral economics.
What's his main contribution here?
Well, Thaler basically spent his career showing how traditional economics got human psychology wrong. His work digs into why we make irrational choices, the cognitive biases, the mental shortcuts. That's the foundation.
He gives us the why.
Exactly, the why we mess up.
And then there's Cass Sunstein. He comes from a different world, more law and policy.
Right. A leading legal scholar, he actually worked in the White House implementing policy, so he brings this very practical, real-world perspective.
So it's like theory meets practice.
It's a brilliant pairing, really. Thaler provides the deep understanding of human behavior, the psychology.
And Sunstein figures out how to apply it ethically within government and organizations.
Precisely. It connects the dots between here's how people actually think and act and, okay, so what can we do about that in policy and system design?
It explains so much, like why setting up a 401k feels complicated or even just why the salad bar is sometimes hidden in the back of the cafeteria.
Ha, yes. You start seeing choice architecture everywhere once you know what to look for.
So let's break down the core idea. It starts with challenging that old view of us as perfectly rational econs.
Yeah, that's the starting point. The reality is we're humans, and humans have predictable quirks, biases, things like loss aversion, hating losses, more than we like equivalent gains.
Oh yeah, definitely feel that one.
Or the status quo bias, just sticking with what we've got, even if it's not great. And of course, the big one, present bias. Wanting good things now, putting off the hard stuff for later.
Like saving for retirement.
Mm-hmm. So if that's how we are, trying to fix people directly is maybe not the best approach.
Instead, they say fix the context, the environment in which we make the choice.
And that context is the choice architecture. It's how options are presented, designed, framed.
Who designs the form, how the website flows, where the food is placed.
Exactly. And the crucial insight is, this architecture is always there. It's inevitable. You can't not have a choice architecture.
Because even trying to be neutral is itself a design choice, right? Like, where do you put the options on a list?
Precisely. There's no such thing as a neutral design. Let's take their classic example. Carolyn, the cafeteria director.
Okay.
She has to decide where to put the French fries and where to put the fruit salad. Whatever she chooses, putting fruit at eye level first or hiding it influences what kids pick.
So doing nothing or arranging things randomly is still a choice that affects outcomes.
Right. And because it's unavoidable, Thaler and Sunstein argue that choice architects have a kind of ethical responsibility.
A responsibility to design things thoughtfully, to help people make better choices.
Yes. To steer people towards what's likely best for them, according to the evidence. And that brings us back to libertarian paternalism.
Okay, let's tackle that term again. Paternalism suggests someone deciding what's good for me. Libertarian suggests freedom. How do they square that circle?
They're very clear about it. It's paternalistic because the architect is trying to influence behavior for people's own good based on behavioral science insights.
Like putting the healthy food first.
Exactly. But, and this is the key, it remains libertarian because it never eliminates choice. You can still grab the fries if you really want them.
The opt-out is always there. No options are banned or made significantly harder to get.
Correct. No coercion. You're just being nudged, gently guided towards a potentially better path. But the final decision is always yours.
So it's not about turning us into perfect logical econs.
No, not at all. It's about acknowledging our human tendencies, the impulsive doer side of us.
The one that wants the cookie now.
Right. And designing the environment so that our more thoughtful, long-term focused side, the planner, has a better chance of winning that internal tug of war.
Making it easier to do the thing we know we should do.
That's the essence of it.
Okay, let's dig a bit deeper into why our brains need this kind of help. The book talks about two systems of thinking.
Yeah, the automatic system and the reflective system.
Automatic is fast, intuitive, emotional, kind of our gut reaction.
Exactly. It runs most of the show in daily life. It uses heuristics, mental shortcuts to make quick judgments.
And the reflective system.
That's the slow, deliberate, conscious reasoning part of our brain. It takes effort.
And the problem is we rely way too much on the automatic system, and its shortcuts can lead us astray.
Absolutely. They cause systematic biases, like anchoring, getting stuck on the first piece of information you hear.
Like when you're negotiating a salary and the first number thrown out just hangs there?
Totally. Or availability bias. We worry much more about, say, plane crashes than heart disease, just because the dramatic event sticks in our minds more easily from news coverage.
Even though statistically, the boring risks are far more likely.
Right. And then there's present bias again, that constant battle between what feels good now versus what's good for us long term.
The planner wants to save, the doer wants to spend.
That conflict is huge, especially for decisions that are complex, infrequent, and where you don't get immediate feedback.
Like choosing a mortgage or a retirement plan. Or health insurance.
Those are the perfect examples. Your automatic system is just not equipped to handle that kind of complexity well. That's where nudges become really valuable.
So given how strong these biases and our tendency towards inertia are, what's the most powerful tool the choice architect has? You mentioned defaults earlier.
Defaults, they are incredibly powerful, maybe the most powerful nudge of all.
Why? Just because we're lazy?
Partly laziness or inertia, but also the status quo bias. We tend to stick with the preset option. It often feels like the recommended or normal thing to do. It takes effort, mental and sometimes physical, to change it.
And the book gives a really striking example of this with organ donation, right?
Oh, it's dramatic. They compared European countries that are otherwise culturally similar in countries with an opt-in system.
Where you have to actively sign up to be donor.
Right. Participation rates are often low, maybe 10%, 20%, sometimes a bit higher, but generally low.
Okay.
But in countries with an opt-out system where you're automatically considered a donor unless you actively choose to opt out.
The default is donation.
Yes. Participation rates jump to like 90% or even higher.
Wow. That's huge. Just from changing the default setting.
Exactly. Same people, similar cultures, totally different outcomes just based on leveraging inertia. It saves lives. And critically, it still preserves the freedom to say no.
That really highlights the power. It's not about convincing people. It's about making the desired action the path of least resistance.
Precisely. And this isn't just theoretical. It has real-world applications, especially in finance.
Let's talk about one of their big successes, the Save More Tomorrow program, or SMART.
Right. This is a classic behavioral design. It tackles the saving problem head on.
How does it get around our resistance to saving, that present bias?
It's clever. First, you commit now to save more later. Usually you agree to allocate a portion of your future pay raises towards retirement savings.
Ah, so it doesn't hurt today. The planner makes the decision for the future doer.
Exactly. It bypasses present bias. And second, crucially, it tackles loss aversion. Because the extra saving comes out of a raise money you haven't gotten used to having yet, your actual take-home pay never goes down.
Oh, that's smart. It doesn't feel like a loss from your current budget.
Correct. It's relatively painless, it happens automatically, and it's been shown to be incredibly effective at boosting savings rates.
It designs around our psychological raid blocks instead of fighting them?
That's the core principle. Now, nudges don't have to be big programs. Sometimes they're tiny.
Like the famous fly in the urinal.
Huh. Yes, the Amsterdam airport story. they etched a tiny image of a fly inside the men's urinals.
Just a picture of a fly.
Yep. It gave men an unconscious target to aim for. Sounds silly, but the result was a significant reduction in spillage, which meant lower cleaning costs.
All from a tiny, almost invisible change in the environment.
It shows how even small, clever cues can influence behavior, often more effectively than just telling people what to do.
Okay, but this power, it does raise questions. If nudges work so well, couldn't they be used for bad? By corporations trying to sell us stuff we don't need, or governments pushing an agenda?
That's the central ethical challenge, and Thaler and Sunstein confront it directly. Their first point is choice architecture is happening anyway.
Right, like we said, it's unavoidable.
Exactly. Marketers are nudging you constantly. Website designers are nudging you, sometimes thoughtfully, sometimes carelessly, sometimes maybe even exploitatively.
So the question isn't whether to nudge.
It's how and why. Since architecture is inevitable, they argue we have a kind of moral obligation to design it consciously, transparently, and in ways that genuinely benefit the people making the choices.
Rather than leaving it to chance, or worse, to those who might exploit our biases.
Precisely. It reframes it from manipulation to responsible design. If you're going to be nudged anyway, wouldn't you prefer the architect was trying to help you achieve your own goals?
That makes a lot of sense. It puts the responsibility on the designer.
Yeah. The book really gave us the vocabulary for this field, and some lines just stick with you.
Let's share a few key quotes or ideas.
Okay, first, a choice architect has the responsibility for organizing the context in which people make decisions. That really emphasizes the ethical weight.
It's not just about efficiency. It's about responsibility.
Right. Then there's the beautifully simple principle. If you want to encourage someone to do something, make it easy.
Forget complex incentives sometimes. Just remove the friction. Convenience is key.
So true. And finally, their defense of the whole framework. Libertarian paternalism is not an oxymoron.
Because the freedom to choose differently is always protected. Guidance and freedom can coexist.
They argue strongly that they can and should.
So this is fascinating theory, but how can you use these ideas right now? Become your own choice architect.
Absolutely. Let's start with money. Always a good place. Use the default principle on yourself.
Wow.
Set up automatic monthly transfers from your checking account to your savings or investment account. Make saving the default the thing that happens unless you actively intervene to stop it.
So inertia works for you, not against you.
Exactly. Turn laziness into a financial advantage.
What about health? Can we nudge ourselves there?
Definitely. Think about your kitchen environment. Be intentional. Put the fruit bowl right on the counter, front and center. Keep healthy snacks like cut veggies at eye level in the fridge.
Make the good choice visible and easy.
And do the opposite for temptations. Put the cookies on a high shelf in an opaque container. Add a little friction to grabbing the unhealthy stuff.
You're subtly guiding your future self.
You are. And this applies professionally, too. If you manage people or design systems or even just write emails, think about anticipating errors.
Like how?
Maybe designing a form that flags potential mistakes before submission. Or even for yourself, if you tend to send angry emails, maybe use a tool that asks, are you sure you want to send this now? A little cooling off nudge?
A civility check.
Sort of, yeah. It just engages that slower, reflective system for a moment.
This has been a great overview. As we wrap up, what was the biggest takeaway or surprise for you from digging into nudge?
For me, honestly, it was the sheer scale of impact shown by things like the organ donation defaults. It hammered home just how powerful these seemingly small contextual factors are. It's not just a minor psychological quirk. It's a major determinant of outcomes. Acknowledging human fallibility isn't weakness. It's the foundation for smarter, more effective systems.
Yeah, I agree. What I love most was the hopeful pragmatism of it all. It offers this kind of third way. Instead of blaming individuals for not being rational enough or resorting to heavy-handed mandates,
it finds a middle path.
Exactly. It shows we can make things significantly better simply by designing environments that are more forgiving of our inherent human nature. The big insight for me is stop trying to perfect the person. Start perfecting the choice architecture around them.
Well put.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.